ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 15, Verse 24. Drishyamana vinarthena na drishyante manobhava karmabhir dhyayato nana कर्माणु मनसो भवन दृश्यमाना विनार्थेन न दृश्यन्ते मनोभावाः कर्मभिर्ध्यायतो नाना कर्माणि मनसो भवन दृश्यमाना विनार्थेन न दृश्यन्ते मनोभवाः कर्मभिर्ध्यायतो नाना कर्माणि मनसो भवन् दृश्यमाना विनार्थेन न दृश्यन्ते मनोभवाः कर्मभिर्ध्यायतो नाना कर्माणि मनसो भवन् दृश्यमानविनार्थेन न दृश्यन्ते मनोभवाः कर्मभिर्ध्यायतो नाना कर्मणि मनसो भवन् दृश्यमानविनार्थेन न दृश्यते मनोभवा कर्मभिर्ध्यायतो नाना कर्माणि मनसो भवन् दृश्यमाना being perceived, vina, without, arthena, substance or reality, na, not, drishyante, art seen, manobhava, creations of mental concoction, karmabihi, by fruitive activities, dhyayatah, meditating upon, nana, various, karmani, fruitive activities, manasah, from the mind, abhavan, appear. Translation: these visible objects like wife, children and property are like dreams and mental concoctions. Actually, what we see has no permanent existence. It is sometimes seen and sometimes not. Only because of our past actions do we create such mental concoctions. And because of these concoctions, we perform further activities. Please respond. These visible objects, like wife, children, and property, are like dreams and mental concoctions. Actually, what we see has no permanent existence. It is sometimes seen and sometimes not. Only because of our past actions do we create such mental concoctions. And because of these concoctions, we perform further activities. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Everything material is a mental concoction because it is sometimes visible and sometimes not. At night, when we dream of tigers and snakes, they're not actually present, but we are afraid because we are affected by what we envision in our dreams. Everything material is like a dream because it actually has no permanent existence. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura writes as follows in his commentary, Arthena vyagra sarpadina vinaiva drishyamana svapnadi bhange satina drishyante tadevam dharatayo vastava vastu bhutaha svapnadayo vastubhutascha sarve manobhava manovasana janyatavan manobhava. At night, one dreams of tigers and snakes, and while dreaming, he actually sees them. But as soon as the dream is broken, they no longer exist. Similarly, the material world is a creation of our mental concoctions. We have come to this material world to enjoy material resources. And by mental concoction, we discover many, many objects of enjoyment because our minds are absorbed in material things. This is why we receive various bodies. According to our mental concoctions, we work in various ways, desiring various achievements. And by nature and the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, karmana daivanetrena, we get the advantage we desire. Thus we become more and more involved with material concoctions. This is the reason for our suffering in the material world. By one kind of activity we create another, and they are all products of our mental concoctions. Om Agyanantimrandasya Gyana Anjana Shalakya Chakshur Milatam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadat Svapadantikam Namo Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Gopala Krishna Goswami Inani Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Itinami Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyata Keshitarine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gauravani Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. These visible objects like wife, children and property are like dreams and mental concoctions. Actually, what we see has no permanent existence. It is sometimes seen and sometimes not. Only because of our past actions do we create such mental concoctions. And because of these concoctions, we perform further activities. Hare Krishna. So we have a very amazing tale of Narada and Angira instructing King Chitraketu in this chapter. So there are about 6-8 verses that Narada Muni speaks to Chitraketu, and this is one of them. So we can understand that the mind is so terrible, such a fickle state, that Prabhupada explains it creates all kinds of concoctions, all kinds of embodiments in terms of dreams, etc. I once remember somebody asking Indradyumna Maharaj in a class, Maharaj, in this dream I saw such and such a thing. How do I react to it? Because it was so wonderful. Indradyumna Maharaj looked at this disciple and said, 99.9% of the dreams that we have is utter nonsense. Very blatantly he said, it's utter nonsense. 99.9% dreams we have. Because we are so engrossed in the material energy, and sometimes we go into all these various stages of trance while asleep, Sushupti stage and this stage and that stage. Sometimes the subtle body comes out, interacts with the material energy in various ways. And so the whole mind is completely bedecked with all kinds of concoctions. And so Maharaj proclaimed that it is complete nonsense. So don't pay attention or pay heed to all these dreams. Of course, devotees sometimes have dreams of Prabhupada, dreams of Krishna. That is different. But otherwise, 99.9% of the dreams that we face is absolute trash. That's what Maharaj said. So, but then again, we understand that everything in this material world is sanctioned by the Supreme Lord. There is no such thing that goes without the purview or the sanction of the Supreme Lord. So whether they be dreamlike state or wakeful state, whether they be a demoniac state or whether they be a pious or devotee state, everything is sanctioned by the Supreme Lord. And that has to be taken, etched in stone, written in stone. This is very important for us. One example is Hiranyakashipu. He was a big demon, and then he completely took over the heavenly planets, and he actually sat on Indra's throne. And then you can ask this particular question, has Hiranyakashipu actually been sanctioned by the Lord to take over the heavenly planets? I mean, that doesn't sound right, that doesn't look right. But actually, that has also been sanctioned by the Lord. There's always a cause and effect. In the Bhagavatam, it's explained in various ways, cause and effect. For example, on one side, Indra, he committed offense against his spiritual master. So he fell down. And on the other hand, Hiranyakashipu, by hook or crook, actually pacified and glorified his spiritual master, Shukracharya. So because he did that activity, automatically the effect was that Krishna sanctioned Hiranyakashipu to take over the heavenly planets when Indra fell down. And not that because Hiranyakashipu was a demon or he was a devotee. No, just because he performed a particular activity and therefore he got the sanction. But remember one point, Krishna may sanction, but he does not provide the impetus to perform an activity because of that sanction. So which means he has nothing to do with the result of that activity as well, or nothing to do with the activity also performed by that devotee or demon. That way Krishna provides no impetus, so he sanctions, which means whatever activity Hiranyakashipu does, there is a sanction behind that, and that is from the Supreme Lord. So because he respected Shukracharya somehow, his spiritual master, therefore he could achieve the heavenly kingdom and he could actually sit on Indra's throne. So you can see how important it is to respect the spiritual master. So important for us. We have to constantly keep that in mind. Guru means complete, utter respect. So this Shukracharya, of course, because of Krishna's own arrangement, there is divine activity and there is also demoniac activity. So divine activity means sura, pious people. Sura, of course, means you follow according to the rules of Krishna and you perform activities according to the rules of Krishna. So Krishna is very pleased, that means. Alternatively, when you perform demoniac activities, which means they are not according to the rules of Krishna, although Krishna has sanctioned it, Krishna is not pleased with that activity. That's also very important, another point. So this way, when a system is followed thoroughly under Krishna's sanction, under Krishna's shelter, Krishna is very pleased. So like that, we see Bali Maharaj, he was a lot more pious than Hiranyakashipu. And then Hiranyakashipu himself, they performed all these pious or impious activities and they attained a particular state of control or authority within this material world. So which means Krishna has actually sanctioned it. It's quite an important idea. It's quite an interesting idea to think about as to how Krishna sanctions it. So this way, for example, let's come into our own lifestyle. For example, something as basic as drinking liquor. We can ask the question, has Krishna sanctioned drinking liquor as well? And that's an interesting and it's a very valid point as well. Drinking liquor is considered breaking one of the four regulative principles. But has Krishna actually sanctioned this process of drinking liquor? One may ask. Krishna has already manifested an ocean of liquor, so he's definitely sanctioned it. We are aware of that. He's sanctioned it. But he has not sanctioned the aspect of us drinking that liquor. That is an activity we perform based on the free will that Krishna has given us. So that's where this aspect of concoction comes in. Because we have this minute free will, so we create scenarios based on our intense desire to mingle with the material energy of the Lord. So we come up with these concoctions, and then based on those concoctions, we perform activities. And those activities Krishna has not sanctioned. No, Krishna has sanctioned that liquor, yes, because there was intense desire for it. But when we perform the activity of drinking it, then Krishna is not pleased. In fact, Shukracharya, whose example we took, he experienced something like that in his own personal life. Because Shukracharya knew a very, very potent mantra known as the Mrita Sanjeevani mantra. So what he could do was utilize this mantra, Mrita Sanjeevani mantra, and if a demon, if an asura was dead, and he could actually chant this mantra and bring life back into that asura again. So this way, when the demigods and the demons would have these massive wars, some or other, after this total annihilation of the demons, Shukracharya would chant this Mrita Sanjeevani mantra and bring them all back to life again, and the demigods will have to fight all over again. So this would go on and on and on. Finally, the demigods got to know about Mrita Sanjeevani mantra, and they said, oh, we must somehow find out what this mantra is, and we must utilize it so that even the annihilated demigods, we can bring them back to life and we can defeat the demons that way. So who did they send? They sent Kacha. Kacha was the son of Brihaspati. Brihaspati is the spiritual master of the demigods, and his son Kacha, they sent him to Shukracharya. Now look how Vedic culture is so fantastic. Although my enemy's son has come to me and he's taking my shelter, I will still accept him because he has taken my shelter and surrendered to me. Now that is Vedic life. So Shukracharya accepted his enemy's disciple, Kacha, and took him under his shelter to teach him. Although Shukracharya knew through his yogic shakti that Kacha is here specifically to learn the Mrita Sanjeevani mantra. So of course, Shukracharya avoided teaching him that mantra. And some or other, Shukracharya's daughter, Devayani, she fell for Kacha. She fell in love and she wanted to get married to him. Now, as they were together, enjoying some sportive pastimes in gardens, etc., the rest of the asuras, they did not like this. They said, this Kacha is here for some other reason. We have to kill him. So they killed him a few times, but every time he got killed, Devayani would come running to Shukracharya, and then Shukracharya would use the Mrita Sanjeevani mantra and resurrect him again. Then the asuras decided, no, this is not going to work. We have to trick Shukracharya somehow. So they killed him again. They burnt him, and his ashes were mixed with liquor, wine. And they fed this to Shukracharya, who immediately accepted it because his disciples were giving it to him. And then he was in an inebriated stage. He was a little bit drunk. So he did not realize that the ashes of Kacha were actually mingled with this wine. So he drank it. And later on, Daivyani came running to Shukracharya again. Father, father, he got killed again. Please resurrect him. So after some time, Shukracharya realized, oh my God, Kacha is actually inside my belly. So what do I do? If I resurrect him, what will happen? He will tear apart. He'll come out of my stomach. I will get killed. But I still have to revive him because my daughter has requested me. And because Kacha's life force was still within the ashes, Shukracharya said, okay, I'm going to teach you the Mrita Sanjeevani mantra, but once you come out, please revive me as well. And that's what happened. Shukracharya instructed the Mrita Sanjeevani mantra to Kacha, who got revived, and he tore apart from Shukracharya's body, and he came out, and then he revived Shukracharya. Then what happened? Devayani said she wanted to marry Kacha, but Kacha said, my dear Devayani, I came from the womb of your father now. You are like my sister, so I cannot marry you. Which is Vedic culture again, so important. Now in Kali Yuga, there are such horrifying situations where brothers, cousins, etc., you know, they have these unnatural relationships. This is because of these weird mental concoctions that Prabhupada is talking about in the purport. So that is a very horrific situation. But in Vedic culture, see, although Kacha had no relationship with Shukracharya or his Guru Mata, but because he came from the womb of his spiritual master, he considered him his father and said, Devayani, I cannot accept you as my wife because you are now my sister. Devayani cursed him. Kacha, because you've learnt the Sanjeevani mantra, you will never be able to use it. Then Kacha said, okay, I take this as a blessing. I'll never be able to use it myself, but I will be able to instruct this mantra to others. I'll be able to teach it. So this way, he went and taught the demigods the Mrita Sanjeevani mantra. But the bottom point is, the base point is, Shukracharya realized that taking this liquor, although it was sanctioned by the Supreme Lord, just because I undertook this activity of drinking it, I had to go through so much trouble. And that is not pleasing to the Supreme Lord. So Shukracharya actually explains, don't take liquor because it is very bad. It is really bad for your mental well-being and for your spiritual well-being. And Shukracharya actually says, an intelligent man will not accept liquor. He says that. And one of our regulatory principles is to avoid intoxication of any kind. So there's a big reason for it. So Krishna has sanctioned intoxication, no doubt. In the sense, he sanctioned that liquor there, the physical aspect of liquor. But he hasn't given us the impetus to drink that or consume that or enjoy that. That is of our own volition, the living entity's volition. So that is important. Of course, in our country, especially Bharatavarsha, there are still some situations where the state government, like Bihar, like Gujarat, they've banned liquor completely. There's prohibition. So there's still some sattvic activity like that going on in India. Actually, Gandhi, he actually wanted prohibition completely all over India. But some leaders like Nehru, etc., decided, no, we can't do that. We can't do that. Unfortunately, if they'd agreed, then there would have been complete prohibition in India and people would have been more sober. They would not have involved in such mental concoction and mental lifestyles. And they would have been more spiritually, inclined. So that is our situation. But anyway, just because Krishna has sanctioned something but has not provided the impetus for us to enjoy it, does not mean he's cruel. We should remember that Krishna is all merciful. When we remember someone who is very kind, we think automatically of Krishna. He's the most kindest. He's the most merciful. Because in this material creation, he provides everything for the living entity. Everything. There is just, even a street. If you go to, in India, you go walk around in Calcutta or anywhere, you find a dog on the street. That dog knows exactly where to go in a particular dustbin or, wherever, and it gets its meal without any problem. Even a dog on the street, which has no supervision, which has no authority, gets a meal without any problem. That Krishna has sanctioned. So what to talk of devotees or human beings, or what to talk of devotees? Krishna is always taking care of us. The problem happens when we don't follow Krishna's instructions. Well, actually, that is also sanctioned by Krishna, because our desire is we don't want to follow, so we want to go into the asuric pravritti. That is also sanctioned by Krishna. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishtaha matthas smritir jnanam apohanam cha. What is that after that? Vedaishcha sarvair aham eva vedya vedanta krit veda videha chaham. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishtaha. He's present in our heart as Paramatma. And whatever we desire, he knows, he understands. So, and because of him, there is remembrance, there is forgetfulness, and there is also knowledge. Krishna is the source of remembrance. So because he has sanctioned remembrance, so we remember Krishna, then that is most perfect. Because he has also sanctioned forgetfulness, so we forget Krishna and we have asurik pravritti. And because he has sanctioned knowledge, therefore if we acquire that knowledge in the most appropriate way, then we can move away from this mental concoction. So remembrance is so mental, isn't it? It is all about the mind, remembrance. And Krishna says, I have sanctioned this remembrance. I have sanctioned this forgetfulness. So the impetus of activities that we perform based on Krishna's sanction, that Krishna is far away from. He has nothing to do with that. He doesn't get concerned with that. Mayadhyakshena prakriti. Before this particular verse, mayadhyakshena prakriti, Krishna uses one particular word. He uses, who remembers this verse? Before mayadhyakshena prakriti, the verse before that, does anybody remember? He uses the word udasinam. He uses udasinam yat. What does udasinam yat mean? It means, udasinam means negligence, completely neutral. But udasinam yat, the word yat is used. It means as if he is completely negligent or completely neutral. So in one word, Krishna says that he is completely neutral to the activities that the living entities perform based on their own free will. But at the same time, that neutrality, it looks as if he is neutral, because there is a very hidden purpose behind that as well. But immediately after this verse, Krishna says, Mayadhyakshena prakriti suyate sa characharam. He says, under my control, the material energy, she performs activities, and all the living entities are under the control of this material energy. Then they are either bewildered or they are within the correct path. So this way, Krishna provides forgetfulness, Krishna provides remembrance. Some of us may want to be completely against Krishna. We may want to chastise Krishna. We may want to say that Krishna doesn't even exist. God doesn't even exist. Krishna sanctions that too by providing us knowledge and providing us with information so that we can somehow talk against Krishna. So that is also provided by Krishna and that is also sanctioned by Krishna. So every activity is sanctioned by Krishna. Na kartaram iti manyate. There is this verse where the living entity, the spirit soul, although it is embodied within this body, the spirit soul has nothing to do with the activities of the body. Once again, that impetus of the activities of the body is completely under the control of mayadhyakshena prakritim, by the material energy of Krishna. So that's why sometimes in certain theologies we hear there is God, there is devil. We hear all these scenarios in Christianity, for example. There is God and there is devil. Especially when Hiranyakashipu, he confronted Prahlad and then he tried to kill Prahlad many, many times. Sometimes poison, sometimes, you know, throwing him off a cliff, and sometimes serpents so that he could be bitten by these serpents, and fire. At one point of time, he tried to burn Prahlad. At that point of time, what happens to Udasina? Can you imagine? Krishna leaves everything. He forgets neutrality and he comes to protect his devotees. Not even a blade of grass moves without the sanction of Krishna. Not even a single hair of Prahlad was burnt because of that fire. He was not poisoned at all. The elephant could not kill him. He was thrown off the mountain, but nothing happened to Prahlad. So that is also sanctioned by the Lord, because he came and protected Prahlad, although he was completely neutral. So the activity by Hiranyakashipu, there was, Krishna did not involve in the impetus of that activity. So Hiranyakashipu confronted Prahlad and says, where is this power coming from? Who is the source of your strength? And Prahlad looks at Hiranyakashipu and says, the source of my strength is the same source as your strength. Where do you get your strength and energy from? It is the same source. One person is responsible for the strength that I have, and that same person is responsible for the strength that you have as well. At this point, Hiranyakashipu kind of began to understand that there is also a controller apart from him who's controlling Prahlad Maharaj's life. He's trying to kill him, but he's not dying. So which means there is some other controlling authority. So this way, even the Asurik Pravritti people, they also get this sanction that someone is actually the sanctioner. So in line of that, sometimes we get to hear that there is God and there is devil. There is one powerful entity called God and another powerful entity called devil. But according to Vedic Shastra, no, it doesn't work like that. There is only one entity, the controller of all, and that is the supreme authority, Sri Krishna. He is the energetic, he is the source of all energies. Parashya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shruyate. He is the source of multifarious energies. So, of course, when we perform activities, Suyate Sacharacharam, under the influence of the material energy, then material energy, Mahamaya, she can become devilish in our life. She can become devilish in our life. But if we follow the rules and regulations of Shastra, then that same Mahamaya paves the way for our Krishna consciousness in a very nice way. So that is acceptable in Vedic literature. So this Udasinam Asat, this aspect of neutrality that you have, it's quite important to understand that neutrality is for all living entities, but especially Krishna has very special relationship with his devotees who have sacrificed everything just to be under his devotional shelter, his lotus feet. Then that Udasinam is everything is gone. Then Krishna leaves everything and comes and serves the devotees. Krishna left everything and served Arjuna by becoming his charioteer. The position of a charioteer is that of a Shudra. But here, the Supreme Lord, who is beyond all Varnas, he takes the position of the Shudra and he serves his supreme devotee, Arjuna. So that is the beauty of devotional service. Krishna becomes very, very partial to the devotees sometimes. But still, he maintains his neutral position. That is Krishna's very, very wonderful position. Sometimes you have concoctions. For example, this Udasin word that I used from the Bhagavad Gita. In Punjab, there is a sect or a society called Udasin. It was started by Guru Nanak Dev's son. So Guru Nanak's philosophy is quite impersonal. But his son started this Udasin philosophy where he initiated the process of worshipping Lakshmi Narayana deities, but at the same time they would read from Guru Nanak, which was impersonal philosophy. So Prabhupada specifically mentioned that we should not change, because if we change, then the reactions for that change we will not be able to hold on to, or we will not be able to address the reactions of that change. Prabhupada has mentioned this many times. So you can see how in a personal philosophy of Lakshmi Narayan deities, they're reading Apasiddhanta or impersonal philosophy in front of him. So neither they can merge into Brahman, nor they can actually personally serve the deities. So this is Udasin philosophy. They are called neutral philosophy because according to them, they don't care about anything else. They don't care. Udasina, that's where the word comes from. I don't care. So Krishna, although he doesn't care directly about the material aspects of how we perform certain activities, but at the same time, he does care when we perform devotional service, because that is very pleasing to him. So although there is neutrality on one hand, but on the other hand, there seems to be some kind of partiality as well. But that is Krishna. He is the Supreme Lord and he can work any way he wants. We can only take his shelter and we can only surrender. So remember that although we do have that independence, that minute independence, which is sanctioned by Krishna, although we do have that lording tendency in this material world, which is also sanctioned by Krishna, although he is supremely free and we have some minute freedom, which is also sanctioned by Krishna, nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahuna yo vidhadhati kama. Vidhadhati means vidhata. Vidhata means he gives, he sanctions. Kaman, what does kaman mean? All your desires. Krishna is sanctioning all that goes within the material world because the living entity has desire. Vidhadhati kaman. So if that desire turns into serving the Supreme Lord, then how pleasing it will be for Krishna. How pleasing. That way we can come out of all this mental speculation, mental concoctions. Whether you're impious, whether you're pious, as long as one has this desire, then the sanction is already there. What kind of sanction and what kind of impetus that you will perform, you know, these activities, so that you can satisfy your senses based on these activities, that Krishna is completely aloof from. So this way we have to understand that this Vedic literature, Vedic literature has everything in the Vedas. In fact, in the Atharva Veda, it is explained, the Atharva Veda is all about how the world and this body can be maintained properly, and this world and this body can also be destroyed improperly. Both are described in the Atharva Veda. How it can be maintained properly and how it can be destroyed. So even this destruction is sanctioned by Krishna because of the Atharva Veda. Vedeshcha sarvair aham eva vedya. Krishna is also known as Vedango, Vedavit, Kavihi. He is the sanctioner of the Vedas. He is understood by the Vedas and the Vedas are within him. Vedango, the Anga, all the Vedas are parts and parcels of his body. Vedanga, Vedavit, Kavihi. So this way, destruction is also given by Krishna. Of course, if we destroy under the material energy, we go to hell and we suffer. And if we perform certain pious activities, we go to heaven. But Krishna is neither saying come to heaven, nor is he saying go to hell. Krishna is saying, come to me. He says, come to me. And you perform loving devotional service. And this process of loving devotional service starts with Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So it's very easy to go to hellish planets, or very easy to go to the heavenly planets. In fact, the heavenly planets are so many, many hundreds and hundreds and thousands of times beautiful than even the Mrita Loka. But what happens? Kshine Punye, what is that verse? Kshine Punye? What is that? Kshine Punye Punar Mritam, something like that. Once, chine means once your pious activities are over, punya means pious activities. Chine means once it's over, punaravartino, you have to come back to the material world again. So this process of punaravartinaha, taking up the body again, you know, going through all these endless cycle of birth, life and death. Krishna says, the material energy has manifested out of its own rules. This happens. He doesn't even have to bother. It happens automatically. It happens automatically. So this way, you go to heavenly planets, your body is there for some time, then you have to die in the heavenly planets as well. I'm not talking about demigods here, I'm talking about the living entities who have taken certain pious activities. Because of that, they've gone to the heavenly planets, they've regained a very beautiful body, and they're living there. The body is so light, you can fly, you can walk through walls, right? You sit under a desire tree and said, I want this fruit. And you get this fruit, right? And then you're sitting with this beautiful, beautiful damsel under that tree, right? And you're enjoying that company. And while you're enjoying this company with this woman, suddenly your pious activities are finished. Suddenly your pious activities are finished. What happens? That instant, your pious activities are finished, you're falling down from that heaven. You're falling down. And as you're falling down, that person, that woman who was with you, enjoying with you, She sees, oh, you're gone. She immediately moves to the other person to enjoy, because heaven means to enjoy. Immediately, she turns to the other person next to her. And this person, while falling down, is looking, my God, I was with you for so long, and in the blink of a second, you've turned around and you've gone to somebody else. Just like that. And as he falls down through space, through that Ojasa, Ojasa is a particular air, platform of air. Krishna says, Aham Ojasa. He balances Kama, Vishacha, Bhutani, all the innumerable planetary systems. They are interlinked with Ojasa. Ojasa is a very fine, subtle air energy that is Krishna's sanctioned energy. So he falls through this particular path. And as he's falling, there are these Danavas, very ferocious beings. They come and they tear apart this living entity to consume him. And as he's being torn apart, he's looking at that woman who's left him and he's crying. Tears are coming out of his eye. And the soul comes out of those tears and falls down into the material world again through rain, etc. And then, once again, this process of the seed, you know, it begins again. So, going to heavenly planets is not so easy. Especially going to heavenly planets is easy, but giving up your body in the heavenly planets is hellish. So you have hellish situation even in the heavenly planets. Can you imagine that? All because we went through all these weird scenarios, weird concoctions. So, in this day and age, we have to be very careful. We have to be very careful. The scientists may come and, you know, give us a whole lot of information. It is for us to take or leave it. We accept the authority of Shastra. Okay, as far as the scientists are concerned, they've helped us with certain things, you know, get some water heated so that we don't have to be in the cold. All that fine, we accept. But we don't accept scenarios like there's nobody living in this entire universe except human beings in this material world, in this earth planet. That is all nonsense. Because everywhere the entire universe is teeming with life. Teeming with life. And Krishna is so intelligent, he maintains them all. He maintains them. So this is Krishna's very, very special sanction, special mercy. So this way we accept Vedic scriptures as long as it helps us go back to Godhead. Vedic scriptures per se will not take us back to Godhead, but acting according to Vedic scriptures and performing loving devotional service to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord will take us back to Godhead. So towards the end of the purport of the verse that we just described, Prabhupada explains that Vedic literature, as long as it helps us to go and perform devotional service to the Supreme Lord, then it is perfect, completely perfect. So that we accept. So I'll end the class here. If you have any questions or any comments or suggestions, please feel free to talk. Thank you so much. Any questions? Yes, please. Do you have a microphone?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
You said in India, Gandhi attempted to prohibit alcohol. And in the US, there was also a time in history where we attempted alcohol prohibition.
Yes.
And we were not successful.
Mm.
And I'm wondering, is there a time in the universe, in history, where Kshatriyas were able to curb society's impetus by prohibiting sanctions for alcohol and different activities?
Well, it's a... Oh, excuse me. Sorry. So this was sanctioned by Krishna. But let me stop the impetus and not utilize it while speaking Srimad Bhagavatam class. So, please understand that the creation of the Supreme Lord is completely sanctioned by Him. And creation means everything, A to Z, everything, and that includes liquor. That is completely sanctioned by the Lord. Which means even in the heavenly planets, they have somaras, which is nothing but very advanced liquor. You can't even realize how advanced that liquor is, Somarath. But Krishna has not sanctioned, Krishna has sanctioned this liquor, but he does not partake in the activity of consumption of liquor by the living entity. That is completely your call. So, in those bygone eras, like you mentioned, in the US they had some prohibition. It was not so successful. It gave rise to a lot of smuggling of liquor. You know, the whole Chicago mob thrived on, basically, you know, liquor prohibition, and that's how they became so big. In India, Gujarat, they're quite successful in terms of prohibition of liquor, but there's still a lot of underground activity going on. But the government gives you a special license. If you're not from this state, but you're from a different state, we'll grant you a license and you can go on certain days and consume liquor. So in one way, there's liquor going on. So one way or the other. So the moot point is not that Krishna has sanctioned it, but the moot point is we as living entities are taking this impetus to consume it because of our desire to do so. Desire is the one that drives material energy. I have a PowerPoint here, right? This switch out there, plug. You put something on and then you know, you have your light bulb. It emanates some, light and heat. But behind that power is a generator somewhere which is pushing that energy to us. Similarly, the liquor may exist, but behind that liquor there is that power or the generation or the desire to consume it. That is our biggest problem. But Krishna has nothing to do with our desire to consume that liquor. He's completely detached. Completely detached. So, although, I don't know, in previous ages, if the Kshatriyas, you know, performed some kind of a prohibition act and they were successful, I don't know. But as far as the Vedic literature is concerned, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahabharata, I'm reading a lot about consumption of liquor, and that has only created more trouble to those who consume it. All the time. All the time. That's why, as devotees, Prabhupada strictly warned us, no intoxication of any kind, because it is one of the pillars of dharma. Cleanliness is one of the pillars of dharma. Shauchyam. When we partake all these, drinks, etc., liquor, etc., they're so unclean. And there's just no way it is conducive for our spiritual life. Thank you. Any other question? Yes, Prabhu. Microphone, please. That's so that our devotees in Mayapur TV can hear us as well.
Thank you very much for a wonderful class. My friend here, Kurma Chaitanya Prabhu, has a question.
Yes.
Okay. In the case of pure devotees, when they do some activity, like Yudhisthira Maharaj was involved in the gambling match, in that case, the impetus is coming from Krishna because he wants the battle of the Kurukshetra battle to happen. So the impetus is actually coming from Krishna, even though it looks like the impetus is coming from the devotees.
Well, it's an interesting question. A pure devotee like Yudhishthira Maharaj. There is another example as well given. A pure devotee like Yudhishthira Maharaj, he's always honest, so the sanction comes from Krishna, honesty. But at the same time, during the Mahabharata war, he had to lie for a little while. It was a disguised lie, but it was still a lie. Right? So although he was fighting on behalf of Dharma, he utilized his minute free will to utter that lie, Ashwatthama Narova Kunjarova. Remember that point? He had to suffer for that a little bit. He had to suffer. He had to envision the hellish planets for a brief moment of time before going. He actually had to see that. And he was under the vision that all the Pandavas are suffering there in the hellish planets. And he was thinking, oh, Duryodhana and all the others are enjoying in the heavenly planets. Why? Because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yadrushcho Chopapannam Svargadvaram Apavritam. Oh, Arjuna, whether you die in this battlefield, you'll go to the heavenly planets. And even if you don't die in the battlefield, you become victorious, then you'll enjoy all the opulence of this kingdom. So it's a win-win situation for you. Right? So similarly, Yudhishthira Maharaj, although he was guaranteed the spiritual world, but he had to envision, he had to see this hellish planetary system for a brief moment of time. And he was so shocked. He says, oh, my brothers, my wife, they're all in this situation now. I don't want to go anywhere. Let me stay here. So similarly, this playing of the dice, etc., the impetus Krishna doesn't take necessarily. Not necessarily. Of course, Krishna has sanctioned the game. It is there. Not necessary. But then again, we can say, he's a Yudhishthira Maharaj, is a pure devotee. There can be two schools of thought here. There can be two schools of thought. But based on this particular verse, what I'm saying is, the living entity utilizes his minute free will to perform certain activities. But Krishna does not partake in those activities directly. He has nothing to do with it.
Just to add on to that, is it not also said that Krishna takes over completely for those who are fully surrendered?
Absolutely. It is said and it is true too.
Yes.
That is the beauty of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Why it's simultaneously one and different at the same time. That is the beauty of this philosophy.
So therefore the impetus must also then come from Krishna at that point, if he's completely taken over.
Yeah, but for that we need complete surrender. No doubt. Complete surrender. So Prabhupada is completely surrendered. He's a pure devotee. Completely. We're all trying in our small way. In our small way we are trying. But we have to try. Otherwise, if we don't, then what's the point? Back into concoction again. Day in and day out. Punaschara vita charavana anam. What is the use of chewing the chewed again and again and again? No taste, nothing. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavata Mahapuran ki. Jagat Guru Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah, Hare Krishna.